Sure, it's all personal stuff.
Catching our breath. We'll call the regular meeting of the Medina City Council to meeting, and welcome to all of you who are here. We start our meeting with the Pledge of Allegiance, and we hope you can join us. I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Mr. Johnson, do we have any additions to the agenda?
No, Mayor.
Great. We can move to approval of the minutes, and I had no comments. So, does anyone else have any comments?
No.
Would someone like to move approval of these minutes?
Madam Mayor, I move that we approve the minutes of June 4, 2019, for the regular council meeting.
I'll second.
Any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? That motion carries. We'll move to a presentation of the consent agenda by Mr. Johnson.
Honorable Mayor and City Council members, item A is approved court resurfacing agreement with Finley Brothers Incorporated. This is for the Hunter Lyons Park for the resurfacing of the tennis court and basketball court. Item B is resolution approving off-site gambling permit for the Wayzata Youth Hockey District, number 284, to conduct lawful charitable gambling at 3200 Mill Drive. This is for Celebration Day. They're taking over the bingo tent from the Hamel Lions. Want to thank the Hamel Lions for all their years of service with the bingo tent. Item C is resolution granting lot line rearrangement approval between 1495 Medina Road and 1585 Medina Road. Item D is resolution vacating drainage and utility easements within 1495 Medina Road. Item E is resolution granting wetland setback variance to Peter and Lori Mazur for an individual sewage treatment system at 485 Medina Road. And all those actions had to do with direction at the last City Council meeting.
Excellent. Does anyone have any questions of Scott? Would someone like to move approval of the consent agenda?
Madam Mayor, I'll make a motion to approve the consent agenda.
I'll second that.
Excellent. Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? That motion carries. Now we move to the part of our agenda where we allow persons who are residents of the city of Medina to speak to items that are not on our agenda. Is there anyone here who would like to speak to a matter that's not on our agenda? Okay, hearing none, we'll move to the Park Commission.
Madam Mayor, members of the council, park update. Tomorrow night we have a Park Commission meeting. We're going to meet with the Minnesota Cricket Association to discuss cricket fields and a possible place to put one in one of our parks where it might fit. I don't think we have enough room for a full-blown field, but I think we might be able to accommodate them somehow to have a place to play the game. We're also going to talk about two things we just talked about is our capital plan and also municipal park funding and ideas to engage residents in trying to get a campaign to let people know as to what the need for that. So Those are
and
the
that
things.
Is in process, right? And you're just
right, right. This is, yeah, they're just going to keep working on what they've been doing. But, yeah, they have been at it all year. So.
Excellent. Planning Commission, Mr. Amick.
Steve, quick question on the Park Commission. It's interesting that the Cricket Association or the people want to come forward. Because you see them playing up in the ballpark on the weekends. There's probably 8 to 12 of them, and they just grab a field and start playing. So.
Oh, nice.
It seems popular.
It is growing in a lot of popularity, so.
Mayor, members of the council, Aaron from the Planning Commission, Aaron Amick from the Planning Commission. Somehow I successfully was on the Planning Commission for 2 years now without having to come see you guys on a Tuesday, but my time is up, so here I am. So we met last June, or last Tuesday, June 11th. First thing on the agenda was the plan review for Charlie's Restaurant. It was very well received. The worries that were displayed, I guess, would probably be around traffic flow. That was kind of the most that garnered the most time and discussion. But still, even with that, was very well received. Next was Tom and Jim Ditter concept plan. There were really no major concerns at all from the Planning Commission, just kind of a little bit of banter back and forth, but that was pretty much it. I think both of those are on the agenda for tonight. And then we basically took the city, I guess, I don't know, there was unnecessary words and all that kind of stuff in the Chapter 8 of the city code. So a lot of red strikeouts, and basically it says something different now, and we all agreed with that. So,
paper.
no real understanding of it, if I'm going to be honest with you. But in the end, it seemed to make a lot of sense. So that was it. So moving on. Anything?
The red lines were regarding Uptown Hamel.
Yes. Yeah, I understand what they mean, but it was basically the. but that was essentially saying a lot of the same things that after all the red stripes. So anyway, anything else? No.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks.
Thank you. Well done. You should come back more often.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
Years.
Okay. Hi.
Honorable Mayor and City Council members, under new business, the item A is Charlie's 172 Hamel Road concept plan review, and they're coming back before you tonight. They with a small restaurant concept with shipping containers at 172 Hamel Road. It's an updated concept plan, and it meets requirements of the Uptown Hamel District, and a PUD is no longer necessary. Planning Director Dusty Finke is going to walk us through this.
Thank you, Scott, Madam Mayor, and members. So as just mentioned, this is a review of a concept plan. It differs from our review a couple months ago because the applicant is no longer considering a planned unit development, but is rather looking to proceed forward under the general standards of the Uptown Hamel zoning district, as potentially amended, as mentioned by Commissioner Amick a minute ago. So it is a small restaurant at the northwest corner of Hamel Road and Sioux Drive. So we'll get right into it. So we went over a lot of this information in the 2 months ago, so I won't go through a lot of it again. I'll concentrate on the changes to the concept plan, and I'm happy to answer any questions that you may have. So in terms of the site layout, the proposed building was shifted up towards Hamel Road from its location on the north side of the site, which was some of the comments that were received at the City Council especially. So the parking is now proposed to be expanded behind both the existing office building and the proposed restaurant. The Hamel Library on the site would be shifted slightly to the west, but still right in front of the property along the frontage of Hamel Road in that location as well. So as I mentioned, the last time we looked at it, there actually are not a lot of dimensional standards in the Uptown Hamel area. There's a lot of flexibility in terms of building placement. Again, essentially zero lot line setback, trying to draw the buildings near the street and allows buildings right next to each other for your traditional sort of downtown feel. So not surprisingly, what's proposed would meet those dimensional standards since we've had a lot of those. The other significant change did have to do with the architectural design. Again, they are proposing to use the shipping containers effectively aligned in the same way that they were when you looked at the concept last time, but now they are proposed to be clad in materials that are listed within the use within the list of those materials that are allowed in Uptown Hamel. So they are looking to do a wood grain elevator look. So wood is actually a allowed material in Uptown Hamel. And then trying to go for that more traditional architecture, kind of in line with some of the comments that were received. Staff had some comments within your report about maybe some of the things that could be looked at if this does proceed forward to a formal application with some of the technical architectural requirements as well. The other thing, and I should have touched on it at the beginning, so the concept plan, the purpose of this really is to provide comments for the applicant in preparation of a formal application. Generally, a concept plan is completed where there's a request that has some amount of discretion from the city, so a comprehensive plan amendment, a rezoning, or a PUD are the most common. And the thought there is before there's a large investment from an applicant to get that feedback, kind of feel where things might be going. In this case, if they do proceed forward with an application which meets the general standards of the district, there's less discretion. Obviously, Uptown Hamel still, as it stands, actually requires the concept plan process nonetheless. The purpose for that, I think, is just to have a little bit more community involvement within stuff that happens in Uptown Hamel. So that's the purpose there. So obviously we are going to be providing that feedback and in order to try to help expedite any application that may come forward in the future. The one difference to that might be related to this outdoor and rooftop dining. If you recall, this was discussed a couple months ago. Uptown Hamel currently in code requires that in order to have outside patio seating, a restaurant has to have at least 20 inside seats. And then whatever outdoor seating there is limited to half of the size of whatever's inside of the building. So as it's laid out, the applicant is looking for the possibility of being able to do outdoor seating and not have capacity for 20 inside seats. So I encourage the Planning Commission and I can encourage the Council as well to provide feedback on that. Ultimately, that would require likely a change to the Uptown Hamel zoning ordinance in order to accommodate, which is actually subsequently something that the Planning Commission did recommend being enacted in the Uptown Hamel zoning district. So their feedback was in favor of allowing more flexibility for outdoor dining in that case. Regarding the parking, the site plan now has been updated to show 20 parking spaces. The existing office, technically under code, would require 16 spaces. A takeout restaurant, we don't have a specific standard within our code, so then it allows for the city to set the requirement if there's not a specific requirement already in place. So we've looked at it, and one space per 1 to 200 square feet is a pretty common thing in, used for parking requirements. So that would be 3 to 7 additional stalls. And then if there is outdoor seating in the future, there would be additional parking required. As I mentioned in the staff report, and we talked about a couple months ago, Uptown Hamel does allow for flexibility for parking in order to provide that more dense downtown type of feel, recognizing that there is some availability for street parking, and there's also public parking available in the area. Beyond that, the applicant has also stated that they are working with St. Anne's Church, which is the property immediately adjacent to the west, in order to have some shared parking, not only for them to utilize St. Anne's parking lot, but also for St. Anne's to utilize their parking lot or for their peak times as well. So with depending on how the shared agreement comes out, it may be that they would meet that requirement even without the flexibility. But if there is some shortage, that flexibility is permitted within Uptown Hamel at the discretion of the council because of some of the public parking that's available. As Commissioner Amick talked about, there was some discussion about the circulation on the site at the Planning Commission. That was the primary discussion that was had. As we discussed last time, the intersections aligning are not ideal at the, and they are all existing conditions as it is today, from the location of Sioux Drive coming up the hill, being offset by Mill Drive slightly, and then this existing driveway being located just to the west of that. The interplay between those intersections is not squared up. So the city engineer has recommended that there be an analysis completed at the time of a formal application to show that the intensification of the use won't cause any circulation issues with that intersection. And if there is that concern, then we look at ways to improve that access, be it perhaps a restricted access or maybe utilizing that shared access through St. Anne's Church in order to draw cars further away from the intersection. So, happy to stand for any questions again on anything that's in the staff report. The applicant is no longer seeking a planned unit development, so this would ultimately, if the application does come forward, reduce the amount of discretion that the city would have. We would really be likely at that point looking at a site plan review, which is just confirming that things meet the relevant requirements of the district. There's some caveats in that with the flexibility on parking and so forth, and of course the city would ultimately have the ability to condition for health, safety, and welfare, for instance, the transportation issues as we go forward. But we left comments within your staff report, and as mentioned, you already had an update from the Planning Commission hearing last week as well.
Great. Does anyone have any questions of Dusty?
I have one, if I may. So I attended the public hearing last week at the Planning Commission held, and there was conversation about through access to St. Anne's Church. Is that still the case, or?
Well, the concept plan that's been provided shows a connection between those two parking lots. So as it's being shown on the concept plan, we are sort of assuming that that would be the ability to travel between the two parking lots.
Okay. I didn't know if there had been any legal, I mean, if they've got everything done, and I would expect that we'll want some legal between the when the agreement gets done, and that would be my hope.
Yep. So that was one of the staff comments, is that we'd want to look at the shared parking arrangement just to make sure that it indeed did provide that opportunity for the parking. Otherwise, then we'd have to look at whether or not some flexibility to the parking would be requested and approved by the council if there wasn't an agreement in place that could be, you know, sort of guaranteed over time.
Perhaps we should just inquire the rest of the council on the topic of parking, whether or not, you know, that shared parking arrangement is, you know, considered kind of a condition to, you know, going forward, or if you think you might have flagged that shared parking agreement could not be consummated, could you entertain you know, less than, you know, the required parking. And I don't mean to catch anyone off guard, but I also like to give everyone a chance to speak, so I'm looking at both sides of the table if anyone wants to comment on that thought. I mean, I'd love to see the reciprocal access agreement and parking agreement, because I think it would be wonderful if you could do kind of a write-in, you know, into the restaurant and then come out with a full curb access at St. Anne's, or make it just a directional flow. But the St. Anne's users would want to, of course, access the parking on this subject property, I'm certain, through the typical St. Anne's access point, but maybe that can be worked out. But I'm thinking that that would certainly enhance this development, particularly if it were in a permanent easement agreement, because then it also deals with the possibility of a shared situation in the event that the St. Anne's property were ever, you know, redeveloped or reconfigured. But I don't think I'd necessarily say out of the box that I'd look to kill the deal if we couldn't get that REA, but I think it reciprocal access agreement, I'm sorry. Reciprocal easement agreement. But I'd certainly like to see it. Those are my thoughts.
I'm not as concerned about the reciprocal agreement with St. Anne's for the parking as I am with in one way, out the other. I mean, I think coming in and out the same entrance exit is very challenging right there. There's enough parking behind Chloe's, Rusty Nail, whatever it is right now, to provide for additional parking for the restaurant. They have 20 spaces marked. It's a takeout restaurant. I think they got plenty of parking there.
Remember, some of that parking has to be reserved for the office use of the existing building, too.
Right.
But I don't see that parking ever as being very intense when I drive by that site. I rarely
see more than five cars in that lot.
Yeah, at the most, yeah.
And I think that's something that needs to be pointed out to the applicant, that if they do intensify that use, that parking is going to be a struggle for their existing building. I mean, I think it should be noted.
There's plenty of parking behind Chloe's. I mean, there's how many stalls? 100? Between the Campbell Community Center, when nobody's using it, and all those additional parking that you build, there's nobody at the bank after 5 o'clock.
Oh, I agree, but the applicant should be aware that they, you know, if they intensify their use with their building, their existing building, that they're going to have to utilize that space to move forward with a different use.
Todd, do you have any thoughts on parking?
Nothing that I can add. I mean, I think everybody's covered off on it. The traffic flow was when I sat in on the planning commission meeting, and you know, the in and out, definitely a one directional flow seemed, or a circular flow seemed the most appropriate. I do like the idea of if you could shift it over towards St. Anne's as just the in and out from that perspective, but I think that could be a challenge too. So how we approach that, the traffic flow, or how it gets approached, I think is probably the biggest concern coming in and out of there.
And let's take the first issue that Dusty spotted for us, which is, you know, should there be, or would we agree or be interested in relaxing the limitation on outdoor seating? So here we have relatively minimal seating inside, and actually propose to have as much or greater seating outside as the seasonal climate permits. I suppose you could eat up there with heaters, I guess. But, you know, I don't really see a rational basis for that limitation. Maybe there's some history to it. I would agree to I'd be amenable to looking at it on a case-by-case basis, depending on the structure and the use. And maybe the outdoor seating becomes a conditional use.
Actually, is already, so.
Okay, it is. Okay.
What the Planning Commission had, staff had suggested as an alternative, and the Planning Commission ultimately recommended enacting, was having a limitation on the outdoor seating to half of the inside seating, but at least allow a certain amount as a floor, basically. So I think it was 16. You could have 16 outdoor spaces, or more, up to half of the inside seating. This is kind of where they had come down on their recommendation.
Does it make sense to everyone?
I think that creates the what you want to create is the community coming together. So I agree.
Okay. Any other issues that people want to bring up? We've talked about site configuration. Is there anything in regard to, you know, traffic or circulation or site layout that anyone wants to discuss?
Pedestrian crosswalks.
I suggest that we go to the west, not at that intersection. Go to the west down, maybe toward the church, maybe on the west side of the church parking lot.
Instead of right at the corner.
That corner is
it's a hard corner.
That's a hard corner. And, you know, I might even be inclined to say right in and right out if they don't secure that access with St. Anne's, because it's going to be a challenging corner. You're going to have people coming up that hill wanting to take a right-hand turn on Hamill Road and not not, and then somebody trying to come out and take a left, and they're going to be sitting right in the middle of the intersection, mm-hmm. I think.
I would agree with Jeff on that. I think there really needs to be a very firm agreement in writing between Charlie's and the church with respect to accessing via the church parking lot. Otherwise, I think it's a recipe for disaster. I'll defer to the city engineer and what they find out when they do their traffic analysis. But I think we're looking at a lot of trouble if people try to exit left out of there.
What's the distance from the corner to the driveway?
I think it was 60.
It's 90 feet.
90 feet?
From the Sioux Drive intersection to the driveway.
90.
25 feet from Mill Drive to the driveway.
25 feet.
25 from Mill on the south, yeah. So, I mean, that's where your stacking is potential because you can't, I mean, really it's Mill Drive is as much as the problem as this driveway location because that takes this, because of the three-way, the stop at, not three-way, the stop at Hamel Road. In order to stack, people don't want to stack in the middle of Mill Drive, so mm-hmm. you lose, you know, two or three cars worth of stacking distance, and then you're back into this driveway. It wouldn't generally be. You shouldn't.
Any other comments?
Yeah, just one, and that is I have a high degree of confidence that this operator is a very good one and will do a very, very good job and that it's sorely needed in the neighborhood. If we can work out the traffic flow issue, it could be a winner.
I do have one other. Mm-hmm. Well, maybe it's for the applicant if they're going to speak, but it's more or less on if, you know, you're wildly successful, hopefully you're wildly successful, you know, are there plans? Is there an opportunity you could expand to having indoor seating if there wasn't any indoor seating at least the initial onset? Where could that potentially go? You know, just stack another shipping container on the backside and
thank you. And if you could just, for purposes of our records, state your name and your address and introduce your family.
Yes. My name is Grant Bender. My address is 714 Astor Road in Medina. This is my daughter, Victoria, my wife, Katie. The actual Charlie's at the soccer game tonight, grandfather. So, yes, the traffic flow was was kind of almost first and foremost when you look at that location for any type of business that has activity. The business that's located there right now doesn't have a lot of activity. But that corner's tricky regardless of, you know, what's there. It's tricky today. So as we move forward, we've instructed our civil engineer and we've actually drawn it up on our preliminary drawings to attach that parking lot. And Councilman Albers, what was your specific question?
Well, if 5 years down in the future, you're wildly successful, you want to add indoor seating. You know, how could you potentially expand in this particular location?
Yeah, this concept could expand, but, you know, our goals or our aspirations are to, you know, develop other properties within the Uptown Hamel area. I think it does need a real restaurant that's full service and sit down, and it really screams for one. But, you know, that location is still TBD, you know. It may not be that property, but we have looked at the expansion, and you know it was fairly simple. If you see where the stairwell is there, another 20 footer would go adjacent to that, and that would be the indoor seating, and it would seat about 24 people.
So would it just be an extension to the back there, or would it go?
If you see where that green or live wall is in the door there, that is the reason for that design. It, you know, that was the next puzzle piece or the piece.
You put
that
it in.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, and then just to go into a little bit more about the parking and the pedestrian crossway, and that's, you know, that we've taken you know, obviously we've taken a lot of the feedback from the council meeting and the planning commission and the neighbors and, you know, everybody that's, you know, contacted us, you know, to get to where we are right now. But when we did think about the crosswalk, my initial, you know, thought and even suggestion was, why are we trying to cross at the corner? And exactly as Councilman Pedersen says, that was my idea, was to move it down towards the church. And really, you know, a crosswalk from the church area to Argent Park would make sense to me. You know, how do you keep people from, you know, going across the street where there's not a crosswalk is another question. But it sure would make a little bit more sense, and anybody in their right mind would not want to cross at that corner anyway. So there are a lot of things that we've taken to our civil engineer in regards to the parking and the flow. That was, you know, one of the suggestions, the ride in, the ride out, or the, you know, turning in and then coming out through the through St. Anne's parking lot. And we talked to them when they had their vestry meeting. They called me and said, hey, look, we're having the vestry meeting. Our attorney's going to be attending that. And that might have been about 3 weeks ago, maybe almost a month ago. And, you know, we talked about some of the preliminary concerns and ideas of, as far as liability, you know, because that was on the table as well. But we both want to come to an agreement so that we can share the parking areas, and it's a lot better if we can actually connect them. So,
I have a question. Mm-hmm. There was discussion, you know, in the plans they show the library going to the west. I know Marilyn Fortin, who was here representing the library, thought they were going to move it off-site or closer to the church.
And they had already
subsequent conversation.
Sure. They had already considered that it might need to be moved. They hadn't had any conversations with myself, but I think that they were under the assumption that it needed to be moved. I think they moved it on their own the last time. And so this time around, I made it, you know, clear that we actually want it there. I think that it improves the feel of the area. And I think that, you know, it would, there are other places that it could be moved, but it's kind of a focal point and kind of a marker for downtown Hamel. You know, before I even moved out here, which we moved out here 10 years ago, or I don't know, maybe it was 10 years ago. Not that long, it feels like 10 years. It was a point of reference, you know, that library and the hill. You know, those were the two things, so. No, we discussed that, and they're very happy that we're not moving it, but, you know, readjusting it on the property.
Mm-hmm. If you wouldn't mind just staying at the podium to see if anyone else has any specific questions of the applicant.
No, I'm excited to see that something like that could happen in Uptown Hamel, and if you think that Loretto can support three restaurants, I think you're on the right path.
Yeah, thank you.
I have a question. It's a comment, and I'm not an architect. I'm not an interior or exterior designer. And I like the grain elevator approach. And I realize, you know, grain elevators are typically kind of, you know, they might be wood or metal structures. When I look at this design, there's just something about it that strikes me as being a bit more contemporary than Uptown Hamel. And it could just be the rendering itself. It could be the choice of color of the two tones of the wood. I assume the intent is if you're using natural wood that would age to gray, it wouldn't be treated. I don't know.
It's really hard to come up with the right, you know.
Yeah, to get the picture. But it just, you know, strikes me, you know, particularly with the glazing and then kind of the black accents. So when I was reading your materials and looking at your presentation, you had that wonderful painting of grain elevators. And I noticed the red and the white. Green might be a little bit much. And then I think of Argent Park as kind of a white-clad structure. And the property down the way, the old feed mill that's turned into the advertising company, is kind of a barn or red structure. I'm just wondering if, you know, your architect can easily just recast that with, like, a red or a white. And maybe you're completely opposed to that, but I'm thinking it's really, really different. And I'm worried that we might lose what we're trying to achieve in being complementary with so much wood and then the black accents. I noticed one of the doors is black. We've got the glazing. I don't know if anyone else has that feel or if that's just something that is of no other concern.
Well, I think if I understand you correctly, you're going to use reclaimed wood, right? Yeah,
there's going to be reclaimed barn wood from the local area. But that I'm on the same page as you on that. The picture that I provided there is inspirational towards the color patterns, you know, and I definitely go back to the architect and ask for a little bit better rendering of what the feel and when we propose our site plan and all that, we will do that.
And Todd's right. I remember then I read that it was going to be reclaimed barnwood, so that meant it was going to have an aged feeling. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, that gave me a little bit of comfort. But then I thought, well, is it too aged? I mean, you know, is it too undressed? And then when you throw the contemporary elements, you know, the way the staircase is designed and the doors and the glazing, is it just a little bit too much? And should we take on the right-hand side where we have kind of the overhang, it looks like it almost be like a walk-up area for pickup. I don't know if that's the intent. Could that be a little bit more porch-like? Our design standards speak to having kind of these porch feels to them, and that looks much more contemporary. This looks a little bit more like mid-century modern to me than something I conjecture when I think of Uptown Hamel. But
no,
my personal thoughts. I don't know if anyone else has a feel about those. John's kind of smirking over here.
Feel?
No, I'm thinking more of I'm thinking more of a finished, like, red barn look or a white barn look. You know, when you drive the countryside and you see a pretty red barn or a pretty white barn, that's kind of what I'm thinking. But I may be injecting far more into this, and I don't really know what the outcome would be, but it just seems like it might fit in a little bit better.
We're on the same page. It's from a creative and a design. It's you know, if you've ever worked with architects before, you know, you take it to them and you say exactly what you want. And you speak the way you're speaking. They don't always hear exactly what you have to say. So there have been a lot of elements here that just really didn't meet up with our vision. But if you look at that picture of that, yeah. That's really inspirational for us as far as the feel.
Mm-hmm. And then maybe, I think, do you have a metal roof on top? I think
yes.
I think that works
yes.
with. And I don't know. Can you do hardy board in Uptown Hamel? Yeah. Might even be less expensive.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I'm stopping there because I really don't have any.
That's okay. I mean, we'll look at what's available as far as reclaim because we really want to use something that's from the area.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it can't look like an outhouse, you know. That's,
yeah. Just don't put a moon on it.
Is that what Definify?
Well, thank you. Does anyone else have any questions of the applicant? Let's just all page our notes to see if we have any other comments. Yeah, some of the things I circled was compatible with adjacent or nearby buildings, and I was thinking of, you know, Argent Park and the church, and it's kind of those properties are a little bit more finished rather than grain elevator-ish, even though I mentioned grain elevator because I was thinking metal the last time. Talked about porches. I talked about parking. And I mentioned the black door kind of threw me off. And other than that, I also agreed with the staff recommendations and appreciate all the good thoughts that the Planning Commission added to this discussion. Anything else from anyone? Is there any feedback you would like from us in addition to what we've given you?
The only thing that I ask is that when we move forward with, you know, when we come up with the civil engineering designs and the, you know, the really solid, finished designs, I'm really concerned about the crosswalks and the traffic flow. That's something that, you know, that makes me very concerned that, you know, we'll have a problem with a customer that, you know, that gets injured or something like that. That's first and foremost. There's no reason to build a community place if we're going to have a hard time accessing it, and that's important.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Honorable Mayor and City Council members, under new business, item B is Ditter Properties 2032 to 2052 Holy Name Drive concept plan review. This is also an updated concept plan. Jim and Tom Ditter are here tonight. They've requested a review of a concept plan for the potential subdivision of four parcels they own into five lots. And our planning director, Dusty Finke, will walk us through this.
Thank you, Scott. This one was actually reviewed almost exactly a year ago by the council, and is a concept plan for a five-lot subdivision out of four existing parcels. The existing four parcels are a total of 25 acres in area, and are zoned and guided rural residential. Interestingly, though, two of the existing parcels are actually hooked up to the municipal sewer system, even though they are guided for rural, which is kind of the reason that the applicants are considering the concept plan and the potential requests that are before you. So this is the subject site north of County Road 24, east of Holy Name Drive, and east of Holy Name Lake, right on the city border with Plymouth. You can see that the lots as currently laid out or have sort of an odd shape to them. Two of the houses are kind of up close to Holy Name Drive, and then one house is further back, and then there's one vacant property currently. So this is the concept plan as proposed with the five lots. You can see that lots 1 and 4 on the front of the property are smaller lots. They're proposed to be rezoned to suburban residential and redesignated to low-density residential within the city's comprehensive plan. So that's the primary feedback that the applicant's looking from the city, is if there's support for that, the comprehensive plan and rezoning, which would be necessary to do this. So. Right now, the two properties that are connected to the city's sewer system, as I said, are guided rural residential, and they're actually 3 and 4 acres in size. So what the applicant would be looking to do is shrink those down closer to an acre in size each, and essentially reuse the excess land from those two lots in order to create the extra rural lot back behind the properties. Within this concept plan, there would be a new private road, which would be constructed in the location of the existing driveway from which all of the proposed lots would access. So I went through the comprehensive plan information. The principles, descriptions, and objectives of the comprehensive plan were provided. So as the cities would ultimately be considering a comprehensive plan amendment, if this were to proceed forward, that those big picture goals and land use principles would give you guidance on how you would guide properties. So as you look at two properties that are connected to the municipal sewer system because of the bailout of the septic systems in the early 2000s, does it make sense based on those principles for those to be guided to low density residential as opposed to rural residential? That's the primary question. And then we have a lot of information on the subdivision, which is more informative to the applicant as they proceed forward. We suggested a few adjustments to the concept plan that if the bigger question of land use is determined and the ultimate comp plan amendment and rezoning would be supported, staff generally thinks there's no reason that these more technical matters couldn't be addressed within a subsequent subdivision if it would proceed forward. The Planning Commission did hold the hearing, as noted last week. There was actually one resident who appeared and spoke in favor of the concept of re-guiding the properties and allowing for the subdivision, but did raise some issues with drainage between the two properties, which could be addressed or reviewed if there was a subdivision and there was road improvements put in that location. And then following the hearing, the Planning Commission was generally supportive of the re-guiding of the properties that which were connected to the municipal sewer to the low-density residential, and then that would allow that excess land to allow an extra rural lot. So I think the question on the re-guiding, and I think some of the history I believe I included within the staff report is helpful. So in late 90s, early 2000s, the properties along Holy Name Lake were all served by septic systems, and a number of them were having troubles, and there was a lot of lots that were substantially smaller than these properties, which were also having problems. So the owners petitioned the city to actually extend that sewer from Plymouth and serve predominantly all the properties immediately adjacent to Holy Name Lake on the north side along Lakeview. So ultimately the city did do that, and those property owners bore the cost of putting in that sewer system. As a piece of that, these two properties, even though they were larger than the other properties north of the lake, also connected because they also had older septic systems that ultimately would drain to the lake as well. And there were also a few other properties east of Holy Name that were connected at that time as well. In connection with that, the city also rezoned a number of those properties to the suburban residential zoning district. So essentially, all of the properties that were connected to the sanitary sewer system at that point were also rezoned to suburban residential, with the exception of four properties. The best I can tell, I think the thought behind that was those properties were larger than 60,000 square feet in size. So if they would have been rezoned to suburban residential, recognizing that they were hooked up to the sanitary sewer system, there would be an argument then that for 30,000 square foot lot minimum, and they had more than 60, that they ought to be able to subdivide their property in the future. But that wasn't the intent of extending the sewer system. The intent was really to bail out the existing lots, not to allow further subdivision. So it was kind of, a defensive mechanism to not rezone these properties that were much larger, because that would then allow for more subdivision. So what you have in this case is not the request for more sewered lots, but to shrink the existing or the lots that would be hooked up to sewer and then use that land, excess land, to get an extra rural lot. So I think if that history is helpful, I think it kind of helped inform staff as we were considering it.
Any questions of Dusty?
So the new lot is, I mean, is there sewer concerns there too, or not sewer, but septic concerns?
Well, they would have to show two septic sites, primary and an alternate, like any other rural subdivision. So, I mean, I think there's nothing that we've seen which wouldn't suggest they couldn't have a handful of septic sites.
From the problem areas, I'm assuming.
Right. And practically speaking, I think these two properties back in 2000 probably could have also put a new septic system in with the land that they have available. But, you know, there's cost of that. The sewer system was going by, and the decision was made at that point that these properties contributed towards the cost of that sewer system and were able to hook up rather than putting that money into new septics.
Yeah. Any questions?
No questions.
Well, I think, you know, just to walk through a couple of items that I noted as I was reading and thinking, you know, trying to be the devil's advocate, you know, do we have the risk that you actually pointed out about whether or not these properties, if we rezoned the two lots, 1 and 4, to suburban residential, if we could be faced with greater density in the future? And I see that the minimum lot requirement is 30,000 square feet, and one is 57 and one is 45, so, and they're separated, so they can't be combined. They're separated by the private road, so I don't see any potential for any type of a redevelopment. So that satisfied me. I think I also take stock of the fact that we're only going to have two sewered lots, and this family has already paid for that connection. It seems it should be able to utilize that that sewer, and it would be no additional cost to the city. And what it does is when you drive this property, and thank you for letting me come by, it's beautiful property. And to preserve the three lots as rural residential and keep these two lots, you know, really pretty large lots in front, leads to what the council has been driving at in so many of its development analysis in the past few years, which is preserve as much you can for development as rural residential. It's what I've referred to sometimes as defensive zoning. So I'm quite pleased, you know, with the outcome. I think, you know, we previously concluded that, and maybe we've since changed the language, but suburban residential suggests connection to, you know, municipal services, which some would say means that it should be connected to both water and sewer. But I think this is a particular situation because of the connection to the sewer. They are connected to urban services. It just happens to be municipal sewer services, not both water and sewer. And I think this council in prior deliberations, you know, went past that point. But I just wanted to bring it up to make sure that there was still a comfort here, you know, that we might not have a municipal water connection. But I'm comfortable if everyone else is.
Yeah, you know, I think with the uniqueness of the property, it's beautiful property, mm-hmm. and being right off of Holy Name Cemetery. Sometimes cities struggle with that, and they've created, you know, they'll create a very nice atmosphere with what they've got there.
Mm-hmm.
And by the reduction of one of the lots from the last time that we saw it, I think it makes sense to me.
Excellent. So this is a concept plan review. Do we have any other information or thoughts we want to share with the Ditters? Are there any questions you have of us? Okay. All right. Great. Okay. So I don't think we're taking any formal action, but we appreciate you coming forward with your proposal. Thank you.
Thank you.
That's it.
Next item under new business, item C, City of Independence Comprehensive Plan Update Review. And C and D are the same. One's for City of Independence, the other's for City of Maple Plain. Dusty will walk us through both.
Thank you, Scott, Madam Mayor, and members. We've got the write-up, which is a quick summary of each of those comprehensive plans. So we have the opportunity for 6 months to provide comments. We're coming up at the end of that time frame to provide those comments. So in terms of Independence, in terms of growth, they're projected to grow by about 30% over the next two decades, 400 households. One of the things we noted, and we had a similar comment within the City of Corcoran's comprehensive plan, is although they're projecting 400 households, if you actually look at their future land use plan, there are actually acreage and densities which would accommodate 800 to 1,200 households. Without a lot of description on how growth would be managed, how staging would be done in order to decide, okay, which of this acreage gets those 400 units. So that's one of the comments that we suggested, to ask about with the City of Independence. Perhaps of note is, if you recall, about a year ago, there was a concept plan, which I think there were some residents of Medina discussing, along the south side of Lake Independence called the Otten property, which had been requested for sewer of Independence. And of note here, that property is not proposed to be guided for sewer and water development, but rather to be maintained rural. So that's not within that, those 400 households projected for development. Otherwise, we suggested a comment maybe on the intersection at County Road 19 in Perkinsville. If the Otten property isn't proposed to be developed, but there is other property immediately north of Maple Plain that is proposed to be developed, and that's the hard curve at County Road 19 in Perkinsville, I think does deserve a little bit of
investigation if there's going to be some more intense development along Perkinsville, and work with the county on how to improve that that curve as well. And then in comment related to making sure that Independence is looking carefully at the INI, inflow and infiltration into the sewer system, which is shared with the city of Medina. Obviously, a lot of our comments were related to that sewer line along County Road 19 because that's the primary interplay between our communities in that case. The final comment we suggested related to asking Independence to work diligently forward on the agreements related to the ultimate sewer planning along County Road 19. So with that, I'm happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Any questions or comments? I had one. I mean, you had noted, too, that the draft comprehensive plan had suggested that the city of Independence might be looking elsewhere for water resources or municipal water supply. And I'm wondering if we felt that we should make any comment that, you know, as to what we think our availability might be to share that water, like none or.
Yeah. Right. I mean, I think it's safe.
I think it would be. I mean, I think, you know, I think when we commented on, was it Corcoran's plan, we said, well, we're not providing municipal services that direction, so maybe we should say that, you know, currently we have no plans to expand our water treatment and distribution systems, and we don't anticipate that we have excess capacity to lend. Does that make sense to add a comment to that effect?
I'm just thinking of the. Well, and along the same lines, I mean, that they don't use up all of their sewer capacity so that we don't have capacity along the lake ourselves. Mm-hmm. You know, so I don't know if that's addressed by what you said or not.
Yeah, it is, you know, because they would have to amend that tri-party agreement. It's going to become a tri-party agreement anyway, Quad City. But they'll have to address that capacity in there.
And they actually acknowledge that. I think I might have mentioned. I mean, they acknowledge that fact within their plan that any development on that system would be, you know, necessitating an amendment and agreement by the other parties. So right. I think they've addressed that.
Yeah. Okay.
Any other comments? Does that make sense to kind of throw something in there about
the water?
Water.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
Should we consider that also for the Maple Plain letter? Although they haven't necessarily requested water from us.
I don't think they raised it. They would.
They haven't?
Yeah.
We're actually getting water from them, so it's the opposite case.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. So I think.
They give us water for that southwest.
Then forget that idea.
That's right. Well, I can
say. Yeah, they don't give it.
That idea.
They extort for it. Yeah.
We can say in our Independence letter, we already borrow money water from someone else.
Yeah, they don't give it away.
Okay. Yeah.
So in terms of Maple Plain, now they're proposed to see an additional 250 households, which is predominantly redevelopment within their downtown and gateway areas because, with small exceptions, the city's pretty well built out. It's a smaller community. So the primary comments we suggest in that case were related to that gateway development and its access at 29, making sure that aligns with the city of Medina's plans for that intersection, which we've worked with our property owners to align the intersection, and there were some concepts we've seen that didn't match our concepts, so just reminding them of that. And then from what I couldn't see the fact that they do provide water for the city of Medina within their water supply plan. I think that's important as they look at their modeling and so forth. So maybe I just missed that, so I sort of inquired, making sure that information is provided in their plan or pointed out to us. And then I also suggested, and the council might want to discuss whether or not you want to include this or not. It's not necessarily relevant to the comprehensive plan, but at this point, the City of Maple Plain charges the City of Medina property owners who propose to connect to their system a significantly higher fee from a water connection fee than they do properties in Maple Plain. Perhaps an opportunity to bring up the equity of that situation if the council is so inclined. You know, we've had staff-level comments about it in the past, but...
And we have had residents in that area complain about just the extraordinary amount that they're charging.
Is it at all justified by virtue of the distance that has to be traveled to make that connection?
No. It's right across, no, because that would be our expense to extend pipes to our properties, but they're all adjacent to the...
Just for access to the system, yeah. Without the physical piping. Yeah, maybe. I mean, I think Corcoran also gets charged an excessive amount by Maple Grove, and it seems to be an equitable issue. On the other hand, I wouldn't want to think that an adjacent municipality could tell us we had to share our system with them at our cost. In some respects, I can see their reasoning that there should be a surcharge, but I don't know.
What is a surcharge?
Yeah, but the question is how much.
Right.
I believe at this point their fee on their own property owners is $5,500 per unit, and it's $7,500 on Medina. So, I mean, and to your point, I think that was... At least my comment in the past was, okay, so, you know, show where the additional 40% costs are. So, of course, we would pay it if they're justifiable and there's a 40% more cost to the connections in Medina. You know, that's perfectly reasonable. But.
Yeah, I think, you know, I wouldn't mind making a comment in light of that. And I think you could do it in the context of, it's the city of Maple.
You'd like to see them more closely aligned. I mean, can we make a general comment like that?
How many households?
How many Medina households
Yeah.
will that affect? So that's the 22 lots within. Now, their fee structure changed significantly through some of the Park Ridge Acres property. So it wasn't all of them, but there's 22 homes in Park Ridge Acres. There's the commercial properties at the north. East corner of Highway 12 in Baker Park Road, and then ultimately there will be the high-density development property in Medina down there. So, you know, we're projecting 160 units of high-density in that.
Does that make sense to make a comment?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, great. Sounds good. City Administrator Report.
Honorable Mayor and City Council members, Chief Bellin was going to provide us an update regarding the criminal activity that's been occurring in our area.
Pertaining to the burglaries that have been happening, I'm sure if you've watched the news, you see that they're happening all over the whole metro area, hundreds of them. I just want to remind everybody in the city that they need to lock their car doors and their garage doors. Over the last week, our officers have been spending more and more time in the neighborhoods, just patrolling the streets. And, I can't believe the number of open garage doors that they stop. They leave a note for the homeowner to remind them to close their garage doors. But we want to make sure everybody's locking their stuff up because this particular group is hitting unlocked vehicles, and then they go through the garage door openers. But if the garage door is standing open, it makes them that much easier. So I want to remind everybody.
You know, I know we have put this in all of our social media and everything else, but I did write to a few people after our last meeting, you know, that I knew were connected with Homeowners Association and asked them to spread the word. And I think some of that occurred, but I'm wondering if we have a systematic way of doing that. Do we have a regular list of contacts of the HOAs that we could send the reminder to?
We don't. We used to... and group emails, but that's kind of got lost with Facebook and
okay.
It's a great idea to start.
Okay. All right. And we do have their group of our citizens who regularly get something from us. I think if they asked for the agenda packets or the minutes or something. But I think our use of that email is restricted to disseminating that specific information as opposed to, you know,
If the police department wanted to put together some put together a paragraph on it, I could talk to staff about including that with the information.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, and we could even say, you know, we realize
you know, we agreed to restrict this to city business, but this seems to be city business, mm-hmm. you know, right. blah, blah, mm-hmm. blah, and send it out that way. And we might be able to include things. I don't know. Do we still mail water bills? A little statement. Water. Yeah, I can send you the emails that I sent. And I mean, even if I think it's kind of a nice personal touch if all of us know mm-hmm. someone to kind of communicate, mm-hmm. you know, to a bunch of people. Thanks, nice.
Could we send like a crime alert postcard?
And we've done that in the past. The good news is we haven't been, Medina hasn't been hit directly. Loretto had four burglaries. Medina, mm-hmm. we haven't had that group hit Medina. I think.
Or no Independence. Right?
But yeah, in past years, we have had that type of exactly. ring.
And like I said, they are out in the neighborhoods where we've had a couple cars that we've found at 2 in the morning. And so we're watching closely. But we just want to make sure that our citizens realize that don't be a victim.
Yeah.
It's so easy to lock your stuff up and avoid
so, it. You know, like I sent it to one person who actually lives in a rural area, but she said, oh, thanks so much because I'm going to this book club and it's a bunch of moms that have kids. And otherwise, at a school district, and we'll spread the word that way. So hopefully, I think, because sometimes those postcards get, you know, they look like junk. They automatically mm-hmm. go in the junk file. At least they do at my house. Well, I look more closely now that I'm a city official. But, you know, it only took me a few minutes when I got home from the meeting last time just to type up to my contacts, hey, please spread the word to the extent you can. And and Sue's probably going to write about it in the paper. So. Yeah, do it again.
I got an opportunity to talk to the Fields of Medina people to get their inside track yeah. to tell them yeah. about it and Bridgewater people. So
yeah. Yeah.
I got to two neighborhoods or good. Three. So.
And I hit those guys in you know, those neighborhoods too, so hopefully.
Yeah, hopefully they listen to us yeah. and listen to
yeah.
the chief.
All right, great. Anything else, Scott?
No, Mayor.
City Council, anything to report? Activities? Nope. I did mention I went to the mayor's meeting, West Metro Mayor's meeting. They're just a wonderful group of people. And Gary Carlson from the League and Patty Nauman from the Metro Cities organization came, and they had been monitoring the legislature. And really was a very interesting discussion. I found that most of the information was essentially in with respect to, you know, tax increases, et cetera, and some of the other initiatives were in the packet that Scott disseminated via email on June 10th. There was a link to the legislative updates. Then once you go to that link, you get a list of, you know, a variety of topics. And I found that the tax bill to be particularly interesting, but it's a quick update, and I imagine the city has already been through it, but... like, you know, Aaron and others reported, there's been this, you know, cost shift, and we keep having, you know, less money come our way. So we have to, that's sort of like those talking points to let people know that, you know, some of our tax increase rate is really related to the fact that the city is not being supported by the state to the level it had been before. Maybe that's true with respect to Hennepin County funding. I don't know. Great. Is there anything else that anyone would like to report? Otherwise, we can move to approve the bills, if someone would like to make that motion.
Madam Mayor, I make a motion to approve the bills per the information provided in this evening's packet.
Second that. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? That motion carries. And now I will make a motion to go into closed session to have an attorney-client privilege discussion on litigation matter. Specifically, W.W. Fireman George Wesson versus the City of Medina, pursuant to Minnesota Statute Section 13D.05, Subdivision 3B.
And I'll second that.
Any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? None. Motion carries.